Our next case for argument is 21-1965, Supreme Food Services v. Director of Defense Logistics Agency. Mr. Perry, please proceed.
Good morning. May it please the Court, John Perry on behalf of Appellant Supreme Food Service. The Court should reverse the Board's decision below and find that DLA waived a first material breach defense by continuing to contract with Supreme for years after learning of its breach.
Can I just ask you a preliminary question just to have some feel for it? I think the parties agree that there are pending claims, other claims, before the Board. Can you just give us a very brief flavor for what those are, just so we can understand what we do here and how it affects it?
Yes, Judge Prost. There are 41 other claims pending before the Board, all but one of them under the same contracts at issue here. 38 of those claims are claims by Supreme, largely for additional work that DLA added to the contract during performance.
So just the way we decide this case, let's assume we were to decide this case hypothetically as an affirmance. Would that dispose of a lot of those claims, or are they separate and distinct issues that have been raised?
DLA has filed a motion for summary judgment and contends that because of the first material breach holding in this case, all 38 of our cases would go away. We dispute that on a number of grounds, but that's their position. The Board held that DLA learned of Supreme's conduct by no later than June 2010. That finding is supported by substantial evidence showing that as early as March 2009, DLA learned that Supreme had been charging DLA a hidden markup on food and bottled water by purchasing it through an affiliated entity. By June 2009, DLA and the Department of Justice had determined that Supreme had violated the contract and was intentionally overcharging the government for food and water.
So Laguna is a problem, right? Why does it matter? I mean, they may have thought it, they may have thought something of it, but the ultimate determination of fraud was made subsequently, and that's when this time frame kicked in that the Board relied on. So
Laguna,
why is that wrong, and how is this different from Laguna? Because it seems on all fours to me.
Laguna was based on the facts of that case. And
every case is based on the facts of that case. That's not helpful.
We don't read Laguna to upend 50 or more years of case law looking at first material breach and waiver and focusing on what the non-breaching party learned, when, and what they decided to do after learning of that. In Laguna, there was no evidence that the government learned of the conduct prior to the plea. It didn't have a known right prior to that plea being entered. And by the way, contract performance had ended by that time. In this case, we've got extensive evidence, including formally privileged law enforcement and attorney-client privileged information showing exactly what DLA knew, when they knew it, and they had decided...
Did you make any findings in Laguna? Was the result in Laguna based in any way, shape, or form on who knew what, when exactly, the assertion you're making about when they didn't know it and when they did? Is there anything in Laguna in there? Because I can't find it.
The appellant specifically raised that argument on appeal, that the government learned...
I asked you about the opinion.
The opinion does not discuss the government's knowledge of the other underlying conduct because there was no evidence of the underlying conduct. Best we can tell from that case, the Board's decision doesn't even mention the word waiver. Best we can tell, that argument didn't get raised until appeal here at the Federal Circuit.
I have a couple of factual questions. Number one, it was 2014 where Supreme pled guilty to major fraud, right?
Correct.
Okay. What were the consequences of that guilty plea? Did anyone go to jail? Has Supreme been barred as a contractor for the government? I want to know what actually were the real world consequences.
There were significant consequences. There was a guilty plea. There were civil and criminal fines and penalties to the tune of some $400 million. Supreme was debarred from government contracting for 5+ years. There were a number of individuals that were debarred from government contracting for 5+ years. And so there were significant consequences. What we're ultimately here today talking about are the party's contract rights.
So I know. Let me ask my question. So okay, I understand what happened in 2014. So if I understand the setup of this case, the argument goes as follows. And I know you don't agree with all of this, but just hear me out and then you can respond.
Of course.
This is going to be a long Judge Chen-like question. Okay?
Okay.
So here's where I start. So Supreme committed fraud. At what point did the government start withholding the payments to Supreme that would otherwise be owed under the contract? At what point did that happen?
December 2011.
So 2011, the government stops paying under the contract, right? They end up stop paying to the tune of roughly $500 million that they held back. Does that sound approximately right?
Correct.
Okay, so they stop paying $500 million. In 2014, Supreme pleads guilty. The government then says, okay, well, you pled guilty, and the amounts that you demanded from us were wrong to the tune of $358 million. Is that approximately right?
Roughly, yes.
Okay. So the government withheld somewhere on the order of $500 million. The government determined as a result of the fraud that they should have only withheld $358 million. So then how much did they then turn over to Supreme? I mean, because they withheld more than they should have, right? So they gave you some money, which they said was in fact owed to you. How much was that? 150 or something?
Yes, but I'd like to correct a little bit of the chronology.
Please go ahead.
If you don't
I
mind.
Want to understand.
So they didn't stop collecting because of the fraud. They learned about it, and performance continued. They kept paying Supreme. What they did in December 2011 was issue a final decision because of this premium outbound transportation issue and say, we overpaid you. We need $750 million back. And they started collecting $21 million a month.
But that was because of the fraud, right? Because
no.
It wasn't because we overpaid you. Oops, we accidentally sent you two checks in the mail. It was we overpaid you because you're overcharging us.
No, Your Honor. The claim was this premium outbound transportation issue. Back in when the contract first started, they agreed to a tentative rate. Supreme performed the premium outbound transportation mission at a tentative rate. DLA in December 2011 said, you know what? That tentative rate is too high. We're going to set it at a lower amount. We overpaid you by $750 million, and we're going to start collecting on that.
Okay.
Meanwhile, they continued to pay Supreme to perform other work under the contract.
All right, I get it. So it's not a tit for tat thing. I get it now. It wasn't they didn't withhold because they suspected fraud. They withheld for a completely unrelated contract for this reason. Okay. But still, now I want to get to where I want to go, which is they withheld money from you, and they shouldn't have. And what I don't understand is if the first material breach doctrine creates a scenario where they don't have to pay you for the interest of the money that they withheld wrongly. That's what we're here to decide today, right? Whether or not the first material, whether there was a first material breach, but even assuming there was, does that bar your entitlement to receive interest on the money they wrongfully withheld from you? Does that sound right?
And that's another key distinction with Laguna. Remember, what brings us here today is a government claim. They're claiming money back from Supreme because they believe they overpaid us for premium outbound transportation. That claim has nothing to do with fraud. The board determined they overcollected by $143 million, and they need to return that to us. So at the same time the government is enforcing the contract against us, they're doing it in other claims as well. They're saying, whoa, you can't bring, we don't have to pay you interest for the money we overheld. You can't bring claims against us. The contract's invalid and unenforceable for you. It's only valid and enforceable for us. And so the reason the government has to return some of that money is because it's a government claim. The government has this extraordinary right where it can...
I guess I just don't understand why they're not required to pay interest on... I mean, if you haven't gathered yet, this is a friendly series of questions, not a hostile one. I don't understand why they're not required to pay you interest. What is the argument? Why are they not required to pay you interest on money they wrongfully withheld?
The board held that our claim, our request for interest, fits in the box of a claim. And so at the same time that the government can use the contract as a sword to recover from us, it can use the first material breach defense as a shield to block our claim for interest.
Which statutory provision are you relying on to claim interest?
41 U.S.C. 7109.
Right, which requires the contractor to file a claim.
It requires two things. It requires the contractor to be found an amount due on a claim, which could be government.
Okay, but then it refers later back to the contractor's claim. So it's clearly referencing interest when you file a claim.
There's a procedural requirement in 7109 that the contractor also file its own certified claim, which we did in this case.
Well, they're all together, aren't they? It's not two separate requirements that there be any claim and then the contractor file a claim. It's all part of the same provision.
It's all part of the same provision, but it allows for situations where a contractor could recover interest on a government claim for its own claim. But in both cases, it must file its
own claim. How do you get there when what the claim it's talking about that you get interest on is later defined as the contractor's claim?
No, the part that references the contractor certified claim is discussing when the interest clock starts, and it says it starts.
But it's referring back to that same A claim. It's all in the same sentence, isn't it?
Yes, it's all in part of the same sentence. It could say...
Okay, let me back up. Is there a general right to interest from the government absent a statutory waiver of immunity? The answer is no, right?
The answer is no.
So even though in normal commercial world, if you win a case or something, you normally get interest on the money you get back.
Correct.
In the government cases, you don't get that.
Correct.
Absent this provision, you would get no interest whatsoever. Even if the government withheld $500 million for 20 years and then finally gave it back because they said, oh, sorry, you know, if there's no statutory provision for interest, you don't get interest.
Correct. This is the provision.
Right. So if this provision only applies to contractor claims and not give you interest on government claims, you don't get interest.
Correct. The court held in not that long ago in Kellogg, Brown, and Root that contractors can collect interest when they win on a government claim.
But in that case, it was based on them filing their own claims for return of the same amounts.
Which is exactly what happened here. We filed our own claims.
Yes, but the problem, and the interest related to their claims, not the government claim. Even though they won on the affirmative defense to the government claims, the interest ran to the date of their claims for the return of the money and relied on a valid claim that the contractor filed for the interest of the money, for the interest, right?
Which is precisely what we're relying
yes.
on here. Yes.
The problem is your claims are barred by fraud. So how can you get interest on your claims? Because there's no general interest provision for a government claim.
In Kellogg, Brown, and Root, they did not recover on their claims either. The court merely used their claims as the date from when they could start collecting interest.
Isn't your claim related to the separate overpayment of the POT rates? That's not the fraud question, right?
Right. Neither of the parties' claims at issue in this case are concerned the fraud.
So your claim was to the POT rates and overpaying. You wanted the money back that the government withheld that they said you had overpaid. And that claim was denied. Is that correct?
The court or the board below did not address our claims. He found they were moot because the court determined because the government's claim was to establish the final POT rates, the board decided it could do that based exclusively on the government's claim and did not need to reach ours.
I guess one of my questions is, how'd you get your $143 million back? If the government denied, if the board denied your claim and you had no claim, could the government technically have not given you back the $143 million that it wrongfully withheld?
Well, I think that highlights a flaw in the government's argument here. It's their claim.
Well,
they've got this extraordinary right where they can claim money from you, collect immediately, and force you to continue to perform. And so the board rightfully said, no, we have to look at the extent to which that claim is valid, and you've got to return the excess. But the extraordinary thing here is the government is saying it's a valid...
But the reason it had to return the excess, isn't it because you claimed that you wanted that money back? I mean, why else would the government have returned the excess?
I think we would have been entitled to that excess whether we filed our own affirmative claims or not. We filed them as a protective measure in case it was determined that we needed to file our own under
Meritocus.
Well, had
you not filed them, you wouldn't have been eligible for interest.
We would not have been eligible for interest, exactly.
But if it relies on your claims for interest and your claims are barred by fraud, then how do you get interest?
Again, we read...
I mean, KBR doesn't include a fraud component, does it?
No, but just like us, they did not recover on their claims. And so from that standpoint, we view the two as indistinguishable.
But they recovered based on a contractor-asserted claim. They recovered interest based on a contractor-asserted claim. A valid contractor And you can't because you don't have any. The interest there, even though they recovered because of the procedural posture of that case as an affirmative defense, they had filed claims for the return of money. The grounds they raised were not found to be sufficient, but the amended complaint at the board that allowed an affirmative defense still raised a return for that same money based on your claims. What's going on here, I am also a little unclear as to why the government has to pay you any money back, but it must be something to do with to show that they've withheld on their decision improperly, but that doesn't relate necessarily. Even if it related back to your claims and the money returned, your claims are barred by fraud.
I see that I'm out of time. I respond to your question. Again, our position is that KBR prevailed on an affirmative defense. Their claim was defeated, just as in our case. And the court viewed the filing of the claim as all that is required. It is a procedural requirement to put the government on notice that the contractor is disputing the collection of the money and wants interest if they've overcollected.
Can I just ask you one more question?
Of course.
If I read that statutory language as not allowing interest on a government claim, that it requires interest on a contractor claim, and I find that's inconsistent with KBR. I don't think it is, actually, but I do. KBR is not binding, right? I don't have to follow that.
It was a non-precedential decision, yes.
And the plain language of the statute says you only get interest on contractor claims, and your contractor claims are barred by fraud, that would be a consistent reading of the statute. I know you disagree with it, but...
Yeah, respectfully, I think it would be bad policy to allow the government to over-collect on claims, keep the money for 10 years, and not pay interest.
But that's the general policy of no interest against the government. This happens in tons of cases across the sphere. And, you know, whether it's fair or not, sovereign immunity isn't necessarily fair. Congress has to actually enact a specific interest statute that relates to your situation and explicitly gives you interest. And if what you're arguing for is interest on government claims, I don't see a specific waiver. That's why people file mirror image counterclaims all the time.
Respectfully, we think 7109 does not require a contractor claim to have prevailed.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Perry. Let's
thank you, Your Honor.
Government, Mr. Oliver.
Can you explain why the government is giving back money to them?
Yes, pursuant to the board's, may I please the court, Your Honor. Pursuant to the board's ultimate decision, the question in that case, the question before the board was what rates were applicable. The board determined that certain rates that were imposed by Supreme were higher than they should have been. But based on those rates, even though Supreme charged higher than it should have, that still meant that there were funds that would ultimately be owed to Supreme. In effect, the government over-withheld based upon what the board determined was the proper POT rates. And so their Supreme's claim for interest then, pursuant to Section 7109 of CDA, is based expressly on the fact that there must be a contractor claim. That is in the statute. That contractor claim, unlike in KBR, is barred by the government's affirmative defense.
Well, let me ask you, so basically, they were charging something, the government withheld, saying you're charging too much, the board found here's the proper rate, but the government still over-withheld under the proper rate. And you didn't assert any kind of fraud affirmative defense to that over-withholding?
Well, the government did assert fraud based upon a void ab initio. Like, there's fraud that affected from the beginning. The board disagreed with that. That's not an appeal. And so the DLA did timely assert a prior defense of fraud a month after the guilty plea, and that affirmative defense applies squarely to the only contractor claim that's at issue for this court, which is the claim for CDA interest. And so, starting back on Laguna, the very...
But can we go...
Absolutely.
Stay where we are?
Absolutely.
I understand the chief's concern because it feels a little bit incongruous. And let's stop using the word claim because maybe that's a special. But if the other side, if Supreme has established before the board that it is entitled to get some of its money back, $143 million or whatever it was, and the court or the board agrees with that, doesn't it strike you as sort of intuitive that if you have a right or an entitlement to money back from the government because they improperly withheld it from you, that the right to interest in that money would flow automatically from your entitlement to the money? Do you understand intuitive feel of that?
I understand the ingredient, Your Honor, and here is where it comes down to. The board discussed the weird procedural posture of having a government claim, in essence, for this is the amount that DLA asserts is owed. And then Supreme asserts basically mirror image claims, saying, no, the proposed rates are the correct rates. The government's claim is, no, the rates are much lower. And so although the board ultimately determined that there was an overheld and that the rates that were much closer to what the government proposed are correct, or what the government suggests is correct, nonetheless, in order to maintain interest, there must be a waiver of sovereign immunity. There must be a statutory basis for that, and there is in this case. But the language of that statute, again, provides that there must be a valid contractor claim. So again, the only contractor claim at issue is that claim for CDA interest based upon the amount that was overwithheld based on the government claim.
My problem is, if that logic is correct, and I definitely understand your statutory argument, then you wouldn't even have happened to give back the $143 million. They would have had, they have no valid claim, according to you, for the $143 million. So if I accept as true everything you've said, you're not off the hook just for the interest. You're off the hook for all the overly withheld money. It's hard. It's hard for me to swallow.
Is the argument, so let's just assume they didn't file any claims at all. Right. So if they didn't file any claims at all, I think even they would concede no interest whatsoever.
Correct.
So if all we had was the government claim that they owe you, that they properly withheld X amount of dollars, there's no interest provision.
Correct.
And on the government claim, you can't assert a material breach claim, can you, in defense of your claim, or can you? Like, if you say we withheld X amount of dollars and they said, oh no, that the withholding should have been lower, they can do that setting aside their own claims.
Correct.
And the reason the first material breach doctrine comes into play here is because you can use that as a defense to contractor claims.
Correct.
Can you use it as a defense to a government claim?
I'm not aware of case law suggesting that that's the case.
I don't think the board explained that really well, and I'm not sure that you all explained it really well, but it seems to me that that's probably the reason that you have to give back money, is because the contracting officer's final decision on withholding is considered a government claim.
Correct.
And they can appeal that without filing their own claim.
Correct.
And you have to defend that. And in defending that, I'm not aware of any situations where you can use an affirmative defense of first material breach to deny your own claim.
That's
only with regards to their claims, and their claims here, they did file them, and they're out because of that. And then there's no interest on a government claim.
Correct.
Despite the seeming unfairness of it, it's the world we live in with sovereign immunity.
So what we live in with respect to sovereign immunity, and it's the world we live in with respect to the specific CDA provision that provides for statutory interest. It's specifically tied to contractor claim, and for the reasons you just mentioned, the only contractor claim here involves interest. And again, it's a weird procedural posture just because you have government claims and then you have mirror image Supreme claims.
This isn't that different from KBR.
Absolutely.
So is it your view that this is, as Judge Hughes suggested tentatively to your friend, that this is distinguishable from KBR, or is it your view that we don't have to follow KBR anywhere, so who cares because it's non-practical?
The former. It is distinguishable from KBR, not that you don't have to follow KBR. That's not the reasoning. The reasoning is KBR did not involve a first material breach based upon fraud that would then bar a contractor claim. In that case, you had
But your friend says there was no rejection here based on fraud. This particular issue was not based, the fraud stuff didn't play into that.
Well, I disagree with that characterization. I mean, the proper rates were was the subject of final decisions, and certainly the government put forth a fraud, contended that this was Well, let me back up. All of the final decisions based upon the issue of what was the proper rate. Okay, and then following in 2014, following the guilty plea, a month after, you have the assertion, timely assertion of a fraud affirmative defense, and then after that, you have a final decision in which the government, DLA specifically, alleged that the entire contract is void ab initio. So that is the sequence in which fraud came into it. And now we're here before this court.
Yes. Do you read KBR as allowing interest on a government claim?
No, it says the exact opposite. I mean, KBR expressly says
the quantum recovered in KBR was on the government, an affirmative defense for the government claim, right?
Correct.
But the interest recovered was on a contractor claim.
Yes, it was on a valid contractor claim in KBR, and what we do not have here is a valid contractor claim. I mean, it's not valid because there is a prior.
So if there was no fraud here, and the quantum was recovered as an affirmative defense to the government claim, but they still have these same claims out there outstanding, they would get interest.
Can you repeat that, Ron?
So no fraud.
Yes, sir.
They filed the same claims,
yes.
And they also and you had your claim, and their recovery is based upon an affirmative defense to the government claim.
Right.
Would they get interest in that situation?
That scenario sounds similar to KBR. So,
right, because the quantum may be recovered, but they still have a valid contractor claim to invoke interest. Here, let's just assume they have no valid contractor claim. I don't think there's been any challenge. I mean, I know that we're rejecting. Let's just assume we're rejecting. I don't know whether we're rejecting their, waiver argument or not. But let's assume we're rejecting that and that the fraud bars the contractor claims. Your view is because there's no valid contractor claim, they can't recover interest because that statute only applies to interest on contractor claims, not government claims.
That's absolutely the case, Your Honor. You have to have a valid contractor claim under 7109, and there isn't a valid contractor claim because of the fraud affirmative defense that we've lodged, and which has not been waived. Their waiver argument is precluded by Laguna, and this court in Laguna made clear that waiver is the intentional relinquishment of a known right, and in that case, the known right arose following the guilty plea, and the court in Laguna was clear that before the guilty plea in that case, there was no known right. And so in this case, the guilty plea...
You know what your friend is arguing about Laguna and the distinctions among others is that Laguna was different because they didn't really know. The contracting people really didn't have the same information on fraud that the contracting people here had.
This court didn't say that in Laguna. If that was a dispositive fact, if that was an established fact, then that's something we would have seen in Laguna, and Laguna, the court in Laguna with them would have made certain conclusions that followed from who knew what, when, which agency communicated what to which to what.
Well, so the cases refer to known right. What does that mean?
Known right in the context of a prior affirmative defense is when does a party, in this case the government, have a right based upon its knowledge to assert an affirmative defense. Here it's fraud. And fraud is different than your garden variety type defenses that you might see in Barron, Bankshears, and others, which they rely upon, because as we stated in our brief, the CDA expressly removes fraud from administrative consideration. It expressly disempowers contracting officers from settling, terminating contracts based upon suspected fraud in both FAR 33-209 and 210. Those suspected matters of fraud have to be referred to the proper investigative agency.
And that principle generally protects contractors as well as the government, right?
Protects both, but the implications for the invocation of your question in terms of the known right is that the contracting officer can't just in 2010 when there's allegations of fraud immediately terminate and say we're making an election. It can't do that. It has to do what it exactly did in this case, which is to refer to the proper investigative authorities. And then once there is a conclusion to that process, that investigative process, that's when the known right exists. And it's the same principle regarding the board, because this is a board case right below. And as this court in Laguna stated, again, the board doesn't have jurisdiction to make findings of fact. So even if somehow there would be an election that allowed DLA to assert affirmative defense of fraud. It can't be litigated before the board prior to a court of competent jurisdiction determining that there's fraud. The board can't do that. Laguna stands for that principle as well.
I'm still a little bit confused. If fraud truly bars Supreme's claims, all of its claims related to this contract, why would you give the $143 million back? And what would happen if you didn't?
Right. The confusion lies in so far as what is the contract claim at issue in this case. I think that the 143 actually is in relation to the government's, and the government claimed it was, the government made certain conclusions in its final decision as to what the rates were. The board slightly disagreed with that. Based upon that, the board's finding, which the government's not appealing, on the government's claim, then there was an old withholding. And so there's not, again, a contractor claim that attaches to that. The only contractor...
They did file a claim saying you're wrongfully withholding this.
Well, it was a mirror image.
Claim's barred by fraud.
Their claim...
All of their claims are barred by fraud.
Their contractor claims are barred by fraud.
Their recovery doesn't depend on their claims in any way.
But if their claims are barred by fraud, what happens if you don't give them the $143 million back? What if you just say, see ya?
No, I mean...
Well, the board has found you haven't proven your claim to the extent of the full withholding, right?
Right. The board has found... Right. I mean, the board made determination...
The fraud finding doesn't have anything to do with that. You can't assert fraud as a defense to your not proving your withholding.
Correct. The fraud...
Well, if fraud doesn't have anything to do with it, then how can you use... fraud is the way to distinguish this from KBR and other instances by your answer to Chief Judge Moore to simply be, well, their claim was fraud, so we don't have to consider their claim.
Well, to be clear, I guess I need to be crystal clear as to what fraud applies to. Fraud applies to bar the contractor's claims under his contract, and those the only claims that are issued on appeal are the claim for interest, because the other claims, the other contract claims are barred by... were barred by fraud, and the only other claims are the government claims for what are the proper rates, and those and the board's determination based on what the proper rates were, well, you were overwithheld by X amount, and therefore then the issue is, well, is any interest owed? Of course, our answer is no, because that's what implicates the only government contractor claim. I mean, the only government contract claim in this case. And so the confusion is really just over the fact that there are mirror image claims that were at issue, let's say below, in terms of the contracting officer's final decisions. For the reason I say, we ask that you affirm the decision of the board. Thank you.
Wait, you have rebuttal time. No, I'm sorry.
I mean, you don't have to use it if you don't want to.
Come on up, Mr.
You
Curry.
Have rebuttal time.
We'll give you 2 minutes.
I thought we were done.
No. No, come on out. I'm sorry.
My apologies.
If you want to leave, go ahead.
No, I could stay here all day and talk about this.
Well, you can't do that. It looks like you get 2 minutes.
Well, I appreciate that.
Can I just start with, generally there's no interest on a government claim, right? If all that happened is the government issued a final contracting officer's decision, you file an appeal at the board saying the government contracting officer's final decision is wrong, and you win, you don't get interest, do you?
Not without filing our own claim under 7109.
Right. Because 7109 is a provision for interest on contractors' claims.
Respectfully, we think it's a provision on both claims.
Well, that doesn't make sense to me, because if it's a provision for interest on both claims, then that would mean you could get interest on a government claim. But it's not. It's a provision. You're reading it as a provision for interest on both claims with the condition precedent that you have to file your own claim. But that's not what that sentence says. The sentence talks, when it refers to any claim, later in the sentence, it defines it as a contractor claim.
Respectfully, Your Honor, we don't read it that way. We read it as setting the...
Can you give me any case outside of KBR? And I don't think KBR stands for what you said it is. But you would think that if that case stands for the notion that you can get interest on a contractor claim, on a government claim, not a contractor claim, on a government claim, as long as you have filed your own claim, then we would have case law on this. This is not an issue that wouldn't have arisen before.
There are prior cases that have addressed it. There's not a Federal Circuit case besides KBR that has addressed it.
And don't all of them require some kind of mirror image contractor claim?
All of those cases did involve a mirror image claim, yes.
And if those mirror image claims, and the interest runs based on those mirror image claims, right? They don't run based upon the government claim. In fact, if the interest ran on the government claim, it would run from the date of the government claim, logically, not the date of the mirror image contractor claim.
That is not how the statute's written. The statute is written...
statute is written to cover contractor claims.
Respectfully, we disagree. We believe the statute is written to use the contractor claim as the date. And the reason for that is because you wouldn't...
How could that make any sense? What if you filed your claim 2 years before they started withholding money? I don't know how that would necessarily work, but suppose it did, and then they started withholding money, and you say, well, we filed a claim that covers the same subject matter area, and so we should get interest back before they even started withholding our money. That can't be what Congress intended.
We think the reason it's set up the way it is because when the government withholds money, the contractor has an obligation, if they contest it, to file its own claim to put the government on notice, saying, if you're going to collect pursuant to your claim, if at some point you start over-collecting, we're going to want interest on that money. And that's why we think it's set up the way. You don't have to file your own claim. You could simply dispute the claim. If you win, you don't get interest. But if you file your own claim and you win, you get interest back. That's how we read the statute. Well, again, we read KBR to say that the KBR recovered because of its affirmative defense. And the claim was purely to start the clock for interest, which is what the government's argument was. The government was saying, you shouldn't get interest all the way back to when you filed your claims. You should get interest from when you added this affirmative defense. The court found, no, we're going to attach to when you filed your claims.
How much money is the interest?
It's roughly $25 to $30 million, depending on when you start the clock.
Anything further?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Anything further?
Do you have anything further you want to say? No, Your Honor.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank both counsel. This case is taken under submission.